Well, Katie McGinty, welcome to Newsworks Tonight.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
If the polls are right, a lot of voters don't know very much about any of the candidates in this race. What should they know about Katie McGinty?
Well, I'm going to be hard charging for working families, for the middle class. And that means if you want someone who's going to work hard to make sure that we have good paying jobs, that we're rebuilding our infrastructure, that we're getting back in the business of making things again in this country, and that we've got good schools to support all of that, Katie McGinty's your candidate.
What about your background?
Well, I'll tell you, grew up in Northeast Philadelphia, one of a big Irish family, 10 kids. I was number 9. Very proud to have gone to St. Joseph's University, and I was a chemistry major, which really drove my early interest in technology, which then I wound up on Capitol Hill working for then-Senator Al Gore with a mission to try to bring back to the U.S. jobs manufacturing the technology we invented.
And then you worked for in the Clinton White House, I mean, president of the White House Council on Environmental Quality, then in the state government for Ed Rendell as environmental secretary.
Indeed. And in between all of that, have had the experience of running good businesses that do things like clean up polluted properties and redevelop them, and investing in cutting-edge technologies in renewable energy and energy efficiency, water quality, those kinds of key areas of interest, investment, and technology.
When I've seen debates between you and your Democratic rivals in this primary, you seem to agree on a lot, you know, marriage equality and environmental quality and better wages and better jobs. How do you distinguish yourself from your rivals?
Well, in days of gridlock, I think it's very important to see, have you been in the arena? Have you actually gotten it done? Have you gotten it done with people of the other party and other persuasion? And there my track record is long. When I was in the White House, Newt Gingrich had taken over the House of Representatives, and he was a tough character to work with, especially on an environment and public health agenda. But I worked with him, and we passed historic legislation to protect safe drinking water, to improve food quality, to change the way we assess whether a chemical is safe by, for example, making sure it's safe for children and sensitive populations as well. Here in Pennsylvania, similarly, worked with the Republican legislature and got it done. By the end of my tenure, Pennsylvania was one of the leading states in the country in wind energy, in solar energy, and I had to work with a Republican legislature to get the tools in place to achieve that. I think people are tired of gridlock. I think they want common sense and a proven track record of being able to find the common ground, solve problems, and get her done.
Can you give us a specific example, a time when you showed leadership, tackled a tough issue, worked with others to solve a problem?
Well, I'll tell you, I have been fortunate to work with wonderful folks throughout my career. One example comes to mind where we faced a difficult situation in a wastewater treatment plant in Reading that was wildly out of repair, in disrepair. And I sat down with the mayor of Reading and he said, look, we'll work with you, but this is a $150 million job. And I just want to tell you, we've got 70% plus of our kids dropping out of school. We're a majority minority population here. Now, the economic opportunities haven't been there. So he and I, instead of saying, well, we'll turn a blind eye to the environmental problem, rolled up our sleeves and we launched an effort that took those kids that were at risk. And we put a job training and apprenticeship program together with the local building trades. Those kids got their high school diploma. They got their journeyman certificate. And then they got the job of rebuilding that wastewater treatment plant. I think that's the way we need to tackle issues, not turn a blind eye to them, but try to create in any challenge an opportunity to lift people up, to put them to work with good jobs, family-sustaining jobs. That's what I'm about.
Where did you find the $150 million to get it done?
Well, that was a combination of federal grants, state grants, the municipality having to finance some of it. Part of it, I have to say, back in my White House days, in fact, the very first budget we proposed with and on behalf of President Clinton, initiated what's called a revolving loan fund, the first source of funding in the country to improve safe drinking water infrastructure.
You mentioned that you worked with Newt Gingrich. I remember him as a guy who was prepared to shut down the government in pursuit of a of an agenda of real fiscal austerity. Tell us how you did that. How did you connect with Newt Gingrich, and what can a senator learn from that today?
Well, there's a combination. On some issues, we were able to find common ground. We launched the Brownfields program, for example, where you go in and you put people to work cleaning up polluted properties. That made sense to Newt Gingrich, and he was willing to support that. But I'll tell you, we did get fisticuffs, or push came to shove, when the speaker would not agree with me that after hundreds of people were fallen ill in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, when a toxin had gotten into the drinking water, and he refused to work with us to pass new safe drinking water protections, even in the face of lives lost. Well, there, I was not prepared to take no for an answer. And we brought it right to him. And God bless some of the families who were victims of that tragedy, were willing to stand with us and look Newt Gingrich right in the eye and say, it's unacceptable that you won't take action to protect vulnerable people, to protect lives in this country. And I'll just say, a little tough work there, but within 10 months to a year, Newt Gingrich was proudly standing with the President of the United States as we signed that legislation into law.
This state has never been represented by a woman in the United States Senate. In a year in which Hillary Clinton could lead the Democratic ticket, how important is that? And is it something voters should consider in your case?
Well, I think first voters want to be confident that they've got a person who's got the experience, the values, the priorities that they're looking for in a United States senator. Having said that, I think many voters say to me, geez, in the last budget breakdown in Washington, wasn't it the women senators who got together, a little pizza, a little beer, they cut through it, they got it done. I hope I'll be privileged to join that group.
You've criticized the Citizens United decision in the U.S. Supreme Court and talked about the effect of big money in politics. This is an election in which super PACs, various organizations, can make independent expenditures in a Senate race. Emily's List, the feminist organization, has endorsed you, and it's been reported they'll plan a $1 million advertising campaign on your behalf. You can't coordinate with them. That's the law. But your campaign chairman, Ed Rendell, reportedly told Politico that he sees Emily's List as handling the independent expenditure. Are you comfortable with what's happening there?
Well, I think that we need to get money out of politics. I think that Citizens United was one of the worst decisions ever rendered and is literally drowning our democracy now in dark and unaccounted for dollars. As a United States senator, I would be part of taking that on. Unfortunately, Pat Toomey has supported Citizens United, supports this flow of dark money into our politics. I think democracy has no room for that. I would be for sunshine, accountability, transparency. If one person, one vote is going to mean something, we can't have individual voices drowned out by this pouring in of millions, if not in the presidential, billions of dollars of unaccounted for money.
But in a world where unlimited expending is possible under the law, your allies are going to do it, and you're not going to unilaterally disarm. And what's your attitude towards that?
Well, look, I'm going to run this campaign on the basis of my ideas and the jobs I want to create in infrastructure, on getting America back in the clean, high-tech manufacturing space again. It's going to be a campaign that is forward-looking and is intended to inspire people to get back involved in their government and their community and get working for a country that's worth fighting for. I expect and I hope anybody who is supporting me in this race will do the same and have a similar positive forward-looking message.
And I just want to come back to the Governor Rendell's comment as reported in Politico. Are you comfortable with your campaign chairman, Mr. Rendell, suggesting that he knows that there's going to be an independent expenditure with your campaign? Did you talk to him about it? I mean, is it a
I actually
concern?
Didn't even see that particular quote. No insult to Politico, but I did not read it, did not see it.
Okay.
But your essential point is the important one. We cannot coordinate with those entities. We don't coordinate with those entities. The first I knew of what Emily's List might intend to do was when they put the public press release out a few days ago.
When I had Joe Sestak in here, I said, you lost to Pat Toomey 6 years ago. You know, Democratic voters want to know who can win this election. You ran for governor 2 years ago, and in a statewide election, I think got about 8% of the vote. Why do you think that campaign didn't, and you didn't connect with Democratic voters then?
Well, look, every campaign is different. It's unique. Every campaign season is different and unique. I was privileged to run for governor, and it was an experience through which I got to know a lot of people and individuals and organizations in every corner of this state. And I'd say they got to know me. And they got to know me as a person who is talking about ideas and sharing values that they share and hold dear. And I think that's why so many of those people then reached out and asked me to take this race on. One of the things I think is very important at a time factions and divided government and gridlock is that in just 6 months and being in this race, I've brought key individuals in Philadelphia together with those in Pittsburgh, enormous unanimity in endorsing my candidacy. Erie, leaders there and in Scranton. The grassroots, state Democratic Party members, the majority of them voting to support me in this campaign. And as a person who has spent my whole life breaking through the myth that you choose between jobs and the environment, I am also very grateful that environmental groups like the League of Conservation Voters, Environmental Defense, have thrown in behind my campaign, calling me a champion for the environment, even as the steel workers and sheet metal workers, the guys and gals who put the hard hat and steel-toed boots, they're in with me as well. And those kinds of groups don't always see eye to eye. But in Katie McGinty, they see a person who's going to drive forward on an agenda that puts people to work while protecting the environment. That's a good positive thing, and it makes me excited about this race and the future.
Katie McGinty, thank you so much.
Thank you, Dave.